The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
An exciting topic happening here on Agribusiness Innovation. We have Miss Alyssa Whitcraft joining us. She is one of the persons that I would say is helping us to use technology in agriculture in ways that are going to take us into the future. Miss Whitcraft, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Can you hear me all right?
We hear you splendidly. So for our listeners who have not heard of you before, can you please introduce yourself to us professionally?
Yeah, sure. So I am a research professor formally at University of Maryland, College Park. I'm a geographer by training, meaning all things are related, but closer things are more related than further things. And so I use spatial tools to understand what's going on Earth. And I am most commonly known these days as the executive director of NASA ACRES, which is NASA's U.S.-focused ag program. But I helped start NASA Harvest, which is the global and international ag program. And I'm also program scientist for a G20 program that brings together the world, ministries of agriculture, space agencies to advance the use of satellite data for supporting food security and agricultural sustainability.
You mentioned something at the start that I missed, something that things are far apart but close together. What was that?
It's the first law of geography, a professor named Walter Toblin. I don't think I said that right, but I'll figure it out later. It's just that all things are related, but nearer things are more related than further things.
Okay, I understand now. So we've had different people come on the show. And I think you are going to connect the two together for us. And one was, we actually had a guy who did space farming. He helped NASA to grow tomatoes in space. And then we had another company that came on that actually told us how they were using satellite data to help farmers make decisions on irrigation and fertilization, especially in areas where water is very, very scarce. So how then are you now using satellite to create data that farmers or people in the agro industry can use?
So what's most people don't know is that NASA launched the first Earth observing satellite in 1972. So we're 53 years into having satellite data that looks back at Earth and collects data all the time and over the whole world. So we have a really great picture of how things are changing and evolving. One of the very first applications was actually in agriculture, trying to look at what the outlooks were on crop conditions as they'd affect production, so that we had a good sense of how much food we could expect to come from different places in the world as seasons were evolving. So now here we are 50 some odd years later, and we're just at the point now where we have the richness of satellite data and the ability to process it. We have powerful enough computers that we can actually convert that information down to farm relevant decision support tools and information and knowledge, building on those sort of legacy applications of large scale yield forecasting and crop monitoring. And so nowadays we are able to look at things like sustainability broadly. We are using satellite data to calculate greenhouse gas emissions and sequestration, the exchange between agricultural land management and the atmosphere. We're also looking at different conservation management practices. Common ones are reduced tillage or cover cropping. And so looking at both the adoption of those and better understanding their impacts, both in terms of, say, restoring soil health, reducing runoff that can, you know, pollute waters, and then also what they do to, you know, promote long-term sustainability and resilience of the farms in which they're adopted. There's also nutrient management, so looking at how much nitrogen or potash or phosphorus needs to be applied to crops as the season is evolving, so that they can use nutrients most effectively, cost effectively, but also for environmental benefit. And then we're also having some emerging applications on pest and disease monitoring so that you can act fungus or bacteria or virus takes over a large operation and requires much more intervention, if not loss. And you mentioned water management. So certainly satellite data are very useful for looking at how water is being used. And we have more and more emerging work with finer resolution satellites that are coming on board. I mean, finer resolution means like it can see a smaller piece of the field at a time versus like a big old chunk of land, which means that it's more decision relevant, looking at soil moisture and things like that, that can help people with irrigation.
Ms. Whitcraft, so in the Caribbean here, we have things going for us that are being not utilized efficiently or sometimes not used at all. We have, of course, great weather for the most part, except for the times that we do have hurricanes. We have a lot of sun. We have a lot of rain. Temperature that stays relatively stable. But we still import a lot of the food that we eat. Actually, here where I am based, which is in Trinidad and Tobago, we import 95% of the food that we eat. And a lot of our farming is still based on very, very decades old tradition. And we are now trying to get back to a point where we can operate using technology to change this position of us not being able to feed ourselves. We are technically food insecure. Mm. A big situation is that we do not have data being properly used in agriculture. A lot of it is guesswork. Mm. Farmers would guess how much water there is in the ground or might guess how much fertilizers to apply. Do you think then that technologies like these should start to be explored to help the region improve its position in agriculture?
Oh, absolutely. And the opportunities are now there. So one of the limitations that we've historically had with using satellites in the across the Caribbean is cloud cover. Like you mentioned, you have hurricanes. It's warm. You have really good growing conditions in a lot of ways, but the satellite only passes over for a little bit of time. And if it passes over when there's a cloud, the kinds of satellites we've mostly had to rely on just see the top of the cloud. They're not telling us anything about the land. But there's a different type of satellite that's called radar, synthetic aperture radar, or SAR. And it can see through clouds. It can also collect imagery at night. So it provides a really unique opportunity to monitor agriculture in ways that we've been really limited by. And so actually NASA, in partnership with ISRO, which is the Indian Space Research Organization, it's sort of India's space agency, we're jointly launching a satellite scheduled for next month that provides, I think it's 5 to 10 meter imagery every 6 days, which means that we can see through clouds every 6 days as it collects information about what's happening with crops. And so there's a new world opening up, certainly. We've also had conversations over time with different organizations in Central America, SICA, that has similar challenges from a cloud cover perspective. And you're absolutely right that one of the big challenges is there isn't even necessarily a baseline established of where crops are and what crops are even being grown, which makes it very difficult to plan internally, like you said, to ensure that there's food security. We have a project through my program, NASA Acres, which is the U.S. Ag program in Maui. It's led by Hannah Kerner at Arizona State in close partnership with the University of Hawaii, that's trying to help Maui County understand how much food they are producing and what it is they are producing, because Maui County is one of the most food insecure places in the entirety of the U.S. They're reliant on ships coming from the mainland. And so they have about 2 weeks of food should they not have those ships arrive. And so part of their objective is to drastically increase on-island food production, but like from what? Drastically increase from what? There's the need to create the baseline. And so we're sort of using that now as a case for us to expand the use of the NASA satellite and commercial satellite data, by the way, which also exists, to increase our understanding of what's happening in these regions that have been kind of historically either not capable of being monitored with satellites or just have been neglected. So yeah, there's certainly an opportunity there to build up our understanding and the use by extension of the tools that build on the understanding that we begin to create with satellites.
I'm gonna slightly stray a little bit. I recently did a career day at a high school, and of course the parents were with the kids, and where there were schools that would come in to show kids how to be a doctor, how to be a lawyer, those rooms were filled, and my room was agriculture. Now, I'm not a farmer. I'm focused on commercialization, how to take things out of the ground and make money from it. But there were only two students that came to hear what I had to say. And I was trying to explain to them that being in agriculture does not mean that you are the person that's actually putting things on the ground. You can study a lot of different things, and it seems like you have a quite exciting job, but you aren't a farmer, but you are based in agriculture. So what advice would you give to young kids, young boys, young girls that are considering agriculture? It's exciting, but they don't actually want to be a farmer in the field. What has been your experience?
This is such a relatable anecdote for me, both kind of personally. My family's in winemaking. I'm from California originally. And I remember when I was in college, in about a 200-person class, International Development Studies was the class. The professor, I think, asked, who here's family makes their principal income from agriculture? And I raised my hand, and one other student raised their hand. So that's like 1% of this class that's, you know, working in ostensibly in when we think about international development, agriculture is such a huge piece of that. And that was really revelatory for me because I didn't realize how kind of unique my growing up was. And so that's followed through in terms of people really having both no idea that satellites have anything to do with agriculture, NASA has anything to do with agriculture, but also, like you say, realizing how many different ways you can contribute to food security and to agriculture that aren't only being a farmer. And so I guess in terms of advice I would give, it kind of starts with us a little bit. Like, it's wonderful for you to go for the career day, and I'm really grateful and honored by your invitation to be on your show today, because it also helps raise the awareness that these opportunities exist at all. So one of the things, again, to talk about my U.S. program, just because that's my main focus right now, is we have workforce development activities where we're working with youth agriculture programs, but also with sort of the crop agronomists who go out and support farmers to build both their awareness of and their ability to use digital agriculture tools, which run on satellite data, but also a bunch of other different type of data that they're collecting on, you know, high-tech tractors or drones or, you know, soil sensors that you can stick into the soil. And those are kind of developed by engineers and computer scientists and people coming from all different domains and types of expertise, all contributing to the same mission. So there's like a awareness raising. And then also, I don't know if this will resonate with you, but I'm one of the only people that I work with who has a social science background in addition to like physical science and sort of math and things like that. And I have found that invaluable, honestly, because it brings a different perspective to the work. And so I encourage students in general to be curious and follow multiple different paths to build up their knowledge, because that's ultimately what's going to make them unique problem solvers in the future.
I always find that We end up in spaces not necessarily specifically what we studied. My background was management and finance, and I was a started pharmaceuticals for a while, some brand name pharmaceuticals, and then I was the first person to actually invent a process to turn yuca or cassava into pasta. So just totally outside of what I would have done. The decision to be in agriculture then, using your skill set to contribute, was it intentional or did it just evolve naturally?
I would say it certainly evolved naturally. When I started university, I was actually pre-med. I had always wanted to be a physician. And I just, as I started taking a lot of the prerequisite courses for that, I was really bored. It wasn't a good fit for me. And so I decided instead to look through, I went to UCLA, University of California, Los Angeles, looked through the course catalog and saw a bunch of these sort of history classes and sort of different political ecology of agriculture, these different classes that were things I didn't even know really existed. Like, kind of like you said, when you're growing up, there's like doctors, nurses, teachers, firefighters, you know, chefs, like just the things you see all the time seem like the only jobs available. And suddenly this world opened up by taking these different classes. And one of the professors I really resonated with, and people in Earth's ecosystems, it was a geography class. He used a lot of satellite data to look at forests, and I started working with him. And this was around the period when satellite data first started becoming accessible to everybody. This was in the sort of mid-2000s. And I decided a fun project would be comparing the vineyards where we get our grapes from in California, where we get Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, which are from Burgundy. Those grapes are from Burgundy in France originally, looking at sort of some of the similarities and differences between those two regions through satellite data. And I just thought it was super fun. I really enjoyed it. And the place that I downloaded that satellite data from was the Global Land Cover Facility at the University of Maryland. And so when I decided I wanted to go to grad school and follow that path a little bit more, I applied to the University of Maryland. I ended up there, and I knew agriculture was my interest, but I just kind of kept doing the next interesting thing for myself. And here I am, like almost 17 years I've been at Maryland between my PhD and where I am now, working closely with some amazing people in our field, people who have dedicated their lives to advancing the science and technology, but also specifically the applications in agriculture. So yeah, I don't know that I would say intentional. It's not like I was a kid and was like, this is what I want to do when I grow up. Especially because we really have been developing the agriculture stuff out as our group the last 20 years. But really more just doing the next interesting thing to me and kind of building personal relationships with people. It's always about the people for me. I like to work with people who I share, I don't know, ethos with, but also resonate with and want to contribute to a joint mission with.
You mentioned something that resonated with me as well a little bit. I went to St. Vincent on a project some time ago, and I met with a father and a mother, and they were in the fields, and their kids, of course, down here in the Caribbean, a lot of farmers don't want their kids to be farmers as well. They want them out of the fields and in their minds do better or do more. And their kids became lawyers, and they came back to St. Vincent, and they didn't want to be in the fields, but they helped them take their crops further in terms of when it came out of the ground. They were farming peanuts, I believe. They helped them to create a brand, packaging, processed it further and put it out, helped them create little contracts and so on. So I like the fact that you said your family was involved in winemaking, but you were able to take it a step further and look at the fields and in different territories and compare. Kids tend to add that sort of value to it. And development, you have any intentions of getting into winemaking at all?
No. it's certainly my brother. I mean, I love wine, don't get me wrong, but it's certainly my brother took it over when my dad was starting to have health issues. And when he passed in 2014, my brother definitively took the whole business on, and he's an incredible winemaker, really, really gifted. And and I'm very, very proud of him. I just like to enjoy the products as opposed to actually do winemaking. But that said, as I mentioned earlier on, the satellite data that we've historically had, you know, they've been kind of coarse resolution, meaning like really looking at huge chunks of land at a time. And they've been getting finer and finer as time goes on. And the project I briefly mentioned, looking at pests by Katie Gold at Cornell University, she's a pathologist, but her job is to work with grape growers and apple growers in New York. And so her project is actually looking at vineyards and detecting these different diseases that impact grapevines. She had the opportunity some years ago to collect some data in so NASA also flies airplanes. That's very interesting. Most people don't know that. So she had an opportunity for NASA to fly some airplanes over a part of California, the part I'm from. And she said, would any of your friends let us collect data in their vineyards? And I said, probably. So I just texted some friends and they responded, yeah, for sure. No problem. She can come and collect this data on with the when the airplane passes over, she can be in the vineyard and take some tissue samples. Sounds great. And so now my program and the work we're doing actually is positively supporting some of the interventions that my family, friends, the place we source grapes from. We have a very small vineyard, but most of the grapes we buy. And so, yeah, helping them manage their operations and things like that. It's immensely satisfying to finally be able to do something that contributes back. And I'm excited to see where that could kind of go next with some of the other emerging issues we have in California, or not even emerging, around water. There's a lot of drought in California. So looking at ways in which we can help vineyard managers manage the water more effectively.
We have a lot of companies in the Caribbean that are evolving in the field of information technology, I want to say, computers, engineering, that sort of thing. Now being exposed to the potential, how can a young person, maybe in university right now, who says, I like what you're saying, I just want to be exposed more, where can someone go, maybe online or somewhere, to get some exposure as to see what is happening, how it's working, and get some sort of an inspiration to maybe develop something further?
Yeah, great question. There's a number of different opportunities that exist even within NASA. And we are also ourselves starting to, ourselves meaning my little program at NASA Acre, is starting to build out some curricula that can help people kind of start from scratch, but not in a super complicated or overwhelming way. But so, for example, one opportunity is ARSET, which is, it stands for the Advanced Remote Sensing Education and Training Program in NASA, but not all of it is like so advanced that it's overwhelming. They have some introduction to agriculture monitoring and stuff that people can look at. There's also, we're shortly going to be putting out sort of some information about really what satellites see in agriculture, so kind of gaining some familiarity with even what the potentials are. And we're also starting to do some exchange programs between agronomy students, you know, even these kind of youth farm programs, and the folks who are studying computer science or atmospheric science or geography in the universities, so that they can spend some time together, share knowledge, and come up with creative programs. Internationally, I mentioned that we have that G20 program called GeoGLAM. It stands for Group on Earth Observations Global Ag Monitoring, but just go with GeoGLAM. It's been around since 2011. I actually founded, but due to my workload, I no longer am able to lead the sort of Americas effort. And it did include Central America and the Caribbean. Although, as you mentioned, we had, you know, we had some trouble getting some traction in the Caribbean. But I think it's a new dawn. We could try again now. There's also some rural schools programs that we piloted in Central America and in Argentina first, where we bring the sort of agronomy students and expose them to digital tools. And I don't see any reason why we couldn't help facilitate the opposite, right? Where you bring some of these computer science or engineering folks and bring them to farm, space to farm, so to speak. Satellites to seeds, these are some of the things that we say, to kind of gain that exposure. You really can't be successful in studying a place, you have to study like with and in the place. If you just look at it from space, you're not actually going to have the contextual information or understanding of what's happening. So yeah, getting people boots on the ground, looking up to space from the land and looking from space down to the land, that exchange is like critical for both groups of people, both sets of like expertise and perspectives.
When a satellite flies over a spot, how many, you said it, sometimes it takes as much as 6 days for it to be able to get back into that spot again?
Yeah, so it really depends on the satellite. So think of them as basically sort of different cameras that photograph the world differently. There's hundreds of them in space. I think NASA has 20 currently. And some of them pass over every single day. But they're looking at sort of a wider swath of land at a time and a bigger chunk. Like I said, we would say it's coarse resolution. But you're getting that every single day. That's great. And we have two of those satellites. And so we're getting it actually twice a day at 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. when it passes over. There's other satellites, though, that only come back every 16 days. And it basically is some combination of sensor engineering, choices that you make, trade-offs, because the finer the little pixels you're creating, the larger the data volume. So you kind of have to be like, how much data can I collect and process? So there's just different satellites that see different things and come back at different intervals, if you will. But if you get an image of a crop every 6 days, unless you're looking at damage assessment or something like that, that's pretty good for agriculture monitoring. If you're like guaranteed an image every 6 days, you can capture really evolving phenomena and see how the crop is growing and compare this year to last year and things like that. It's decent. I mean, more than decent, it's great.
A question that I'm sure that you are getting quite often, the implementation of artificial intelligence adding to these systems now, do you think that we're going to see more and more of it for its benefit?
Absolutely. I mean, AI is not without its sort of ethical considerations. But I mentioned earlier about how we have better data, better computational systems, and better models to understand the data. In part, when I say models, what I'm talking about is AI, or we usually call it machine learning or deep learning. It's a little different than the sort of ChatGPT kind of AI that I think people are becoming more aware of, or sort of the artistic applications that certainly have a lot of ethical concerns with them. But what we are able to do with these new models is, because they can, you just like throw so much data at them, it is suddenly picking up patterns and relationships that we haven't been aware of or haven't been able to process sort of from innate human understanding and things like that. And so because you basically, I don't know how to describe it, but you're throwing a ton of information and this computer can just run millions of scenarios really fast and notice things we wouldn't notice. It's revealing some insights and better ways of kind of understanding the Earth system that we didn't have before. So that's my world of kind of AI and machine learning and the benefit that I see. It's helping us better forecast yield. It's helping us better understand what's happening with, say, soil carbon and these different things that matter for sustainability. There's also a whole other world of on-farm sort of ag tech deployment of AI that's like, you know, potentially helping with harvests or John Deere, major equipment manufacturer, they have this like See and Spray technology. And so like as the little machine is driving through the field, there's a bunch of cameras on it and it's looking everywhere all the time and processing that data very fast on the fly to detect and recognize weeds. And then it like sprays pesticide at them. I mean, it's like operating truly, like trying to operate at least as a human does in terms of interpreting information in real time. So those are more emerging. How effective those are, that's a very like kind of pilot tool, I believe, still. But those are some of the interesting applications that are emerging in like the on-farm version of AI, which is not really exactly where I work, but some of our tools and data can support those applications anyhow.
It seems like a world that you'd see in a movie, but it now feels closer and closer to home, as it's not that far-fetched. It doesn't feel like 100 years away. It feels like it could be, in my guess, 5-10 years away. So it's interesting to know that all these things are happening.
Yeah, it is. I think it's, I think you're right. I mean, the amount that changed between, I don't know, 1972, when this Earth observing era started, in the early 2000s, before the satellite data started to be open. And that's where like Google Earth and some of the Google Maps early innovation came from, is because NASA and US Geological Survey opened up their archives of data for everybody to use. The amount that changed in that period is like how much changes, I feel like, every 6 months now. Like, there's just such rapid innovation and change that's occurring. It's really remarkable. New satellites, I think the commercial sector is putting out some interesting satellites as well. They have a very different purpose than the NASA satellites, in the sense that ours are science quality, and what you observe today can be compared apples to apples with what the same sensor observed 10 years ago. And it's, you know, it's like a temperature. The commercial satellites often are sort of like an oven thermometer, so to speak, meaning like if you're within a couple degrees of that temperature, that's good enough for your cooking applications. But if you use an oven thermometer for your kid when you think they have a temperature, being within a couple degrees is not going to cut it for that application. Ours are sort of like the human thermometer, if you will. But like we are certainly support, NASA actually buys a lot of commercial data, and we need their data for many of the agricultural applications that we have. So yeah, it's a kind of a mutually beneficial relationship, and there's a lot of innovation in that space as well.
Alyssa, I know that you are very, very busy, and I am extremely grateful that you came on to the show today. I think that the exposure for us here in trying to develop this sector is invaluable, and we really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy day to meet with us. Is there anything that you are involved in that you would like our listeners to check out, or you know, anything that you write in that you want people to follow you on, or anything?
Sure. We have we have our LinkedIn accounts, our X accounts for both NASA Acres and NASA Harvest, which is the global program, and signing up for our newsletters, I think, is helpful. I lament that our work in Central America and the Caribbean has been not fully realized. But like I said, I think we're in a new moment with new sensors that can see through clouds and that are finer resolution, so they can see smaller fields, where we could really kind of explode in innovation. And so GeoGLAM and NASA Harvest are really great avenues for exploring. And GeoGLAM, our website is actually being updated, so I'm hesitant to say go to this website because they might get an error. But Google GeoGLAM and you will find things, GEOGLAM. And I would love to have some reinvigorated interest from people in sort of ag tech, but also in, you know, the governments who work on statistics, or organizations, nonprofits, NGOs that work on agriculture development, to see where there's an opportunity for us to build up the methods that are applicable to the region and that meet the needs of agricultural actors, farmers, ranchers, you know, their support people, policy, and things like that. I would love to kind of reinvigorate that effort. And failing, you know, effective websites available right now, you are also welcome to reach out to info@nasaacres.org. And I can kind of help set up some of those connections if there's interest in what I just mentioned about sort of reinvigorating our work in the Caribbean.
I appreciate it so much, Alyssa. Thank you for joining us today on Agribusiness Innovation. Of course, Freedom 106.5 FM. We crossed borders today and we appreciate it. I've got to run because I believe we have the 12 o'clock news that is going to be coming to us again. So stay safe. Thank you again. And to our listeners, you'll hear from me next week again. Take care.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.